If you see someone walking up to a highly secure building wearing a ski mask and carrying a crowbar, you call security immediately.
Right, it's obvious.
Yeah, exactly. The intent is visible from a mile away. It's a glaring threat.
Because the threat profile perfectly matches our expectations. It's loud, it's aggressive, and I mean, it's just impossible to ignore.
But think about what happens if you see someone walk up to that exact same building, but they're wearing like a standard issue maintenance uniform. They are carrying a clipboard, they have this printed ID badge on a lanyard, and they look, slightly annoyed. You don't ignore them, you probably actually hold the door open for them.
Yeah, they are utilizing the visual language of trust. They look like they belong. So human nature basically dictates that we let them bypass the security perimeter entirely.
And that maintenance worker is exactly what we're looking at today in this deep dive.
Yeah.
Because attackers aren't just trying to smash through the firewall anymore.
No, not at all.
They're taking a much quieter, far more insidious route. Today, we are bringing you three critical stories of the day, focusing on concise transitions, practical impacts, and clear takeaways so you can stay ahead of the curve.
And the overarching theme today really is the weaponization of trust.
Right, the mundane tools.
Exactly. Whether it's a developer package, a GitHub automation token, or even just a basic PDF viewer app on your phone, attackers are disguising their movements inside the very infrastructure we rely on daily.
It is wild, and we're going to cover a massive breach at GitHub driven by a poisoned extension, a ripple effect supply chain attack hitting Grafana Labs, and a colossal Android ad fraud scheme using clever trapdoors.
It's a busy day.
It really is. So let's look at what happens when that front door gets propped open at one of the most critical foundational layers of the internet, GitHub.
Yeah, this is a big one.
GitHub is currently investigating a massive sprawling breach. A threat actor known as Team PCP managed to steal over 3,800 internal repositories from GitHub.
That is a staggering number.
And right now, as we speak, Team PCP is sitting on a cybercrime forum offering this stolen source code for sale with an asking price of $50,000.
Well, we should probably contextualize what was actually taken, because a number like 3,800 repositories sounds completely apocalyptic.
Right, it sounds like everything is gone.
Exactly. But GitHub has stated that currently they have no evidence that customer information stored outside of their internal repositories was impacted.
Okay, so your personal or company private repos seem safe for now.
Yes. But the internal operational code of GitHub itself, I mean, the blueprints of how the platform actually functions, that is a massive treasure trove of intellectual property.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because how does someone just walk off with 3,800 internal repositories without tripping every alarm in the building?
This brings us right back to that maintenance uniform analogy. GitHub disclosed that this entire breach originated from a compromised employee device.
But it wasn't like a phishing email or a bad PDF, right?
No, not at all. The employee actually installed a poisoned Microsoft Visual Studio Code extension.
So, for anyone listening who isn't, writing code every day, what exactly is a Visual Studio Code extension? And why is it so trusted?
Well, Visual Studio Code, or VS Code, is a wildly popular text editor used by developers everywhere to write software.
Right.
And to make their lives easier, developers install extensions. These are little add-ons that might auto-format their code, check for syntax errors, or just integrate with other tools.
You just click a button in the marketplace and it installs instantly.
Exactly. And because these tools are designed to boost productivity, developers implicitly trust them, but the attackers poisoned one of these extensions.
Wow.
So when the GitHub employee installed it, they weren't just getting a helpful coding tool. They were silently executing malware that compromised their entire device.
Which means the attackers are already inside the house. They are operating with the permissions of a trusted employee.
Precisely. And this is a rapidly growing trend. We actually saw a near identical situation recently with the Nest Console extension, where threat actors pushed an update that contained a multi-stage credential stealer.
But Team PCP didn't just stop at stealing GitHub's internal code. They used this access as a springboard, didn't they?
They did. From that compromised GitHub account, they dumped internal tokens.
What?
Then they took those tokens and breached the official Microsoft Python client on PyPI, which is the main repository where Python developers go to download code packages.
And they targeted a specific package called Durable Task, right?
Yes, and they released a self-replicating malware campaign. Security researchers are calling it the mini Shai-Hulud worm. They infected versions 1.4.1, 1.4.2, and 1.4.3 of this Microsoft package.
I mean, the audacity of targeting durable tasks, it's crazy. It's an official Microsoft client. When a developer or an automated system downloads it, there's zero suspicion.
None at all. But the payload attached to those three specific versions is incredibly aggressive. Once it runs, it drops a full-featured info stealer specifically built for Linux environments.
I was looking at the breakdown of what this info stealer actually hunts for, and it is just comprehensive. It
Yeah.
goes straight for the crown jewels.
Oh, yeah, it wants everything.
It targets major cloud provider credentials. It tries to break into HashiCorp Vault Secrets, which, is essentially a digital Fort Knox where companies store their most sensitive passwords and API keys. And it actively tries to unlock 1Password and Bitwarden vaults on the machine, and it scrapes the system for AWS keys.
It is hunting for total administrative control. And the scary part is, it's highly automated.
Wait, really?
Yeah, if this worm wakes up and finds itself inside an Amazon Web Services environment, it doesn't just steal keys and sit there. It actively uses the AWS Systems Manager, or SSM, to propagate itself to up to five other virtual servers.
Okay, so SSM is a legitimate tool that IT teams use to manage massive fleets of servers all at once, right?
Exactly. It's an administrative tool meant to push updates at scale. The worm hijacks that legitimate administrative channel to spread itself.
That is brilliant, but terrifying.
And it gets worse. If the worm detects it is running inside a Kubernetes cluster, it propagates using standard commands there too. It is actively turning the network's own management tools against it to replicate.
And while it's spreading, there is a very specific geographic trigger built into the code. According to the source analysis, when the malware wakes up, it actually checks the system settings.
Right, the location data.
Yeah. If it detects that the infected machine is located in either Israel or Iran, a separate routine kicks in entirely. If it hits that trigger, there is a 1 in 6 chance that the malware will play an audio file and then immediately execute a command to recursively delete everything on the hard drive.
The classic wipe command.
Exactly. Now, we are simply reporting the facts of the code here, obviously not taking any stance on the geopolitical motivations behind writing that specific trigger.
Right, we are just looking at the programmed subroutine itself, but it highlights how dynamically this malware can change its behavior based entirely on the environment it lands in.
What I find mind-blowing is how the attackers guarantee this worm keeps receiving instructions. Because if you build a massive worm like this, you have to control it, right?
You definitely do.
The primary command and control server, the C2 server, was a domain they set up. But domains get taken down by security researchers all the time.
What's fascinating here is the fallback mechanism they engineered, the fire scale mechanism.
Yes, tell us about that.
If that primary server goes down, the worm literally reaches out to the public internet, goes to public GitHub repositories, and searches public commit messages.
Public messages, just out in the open.
Out in the open, it looks for a highly specific text pattern. The word fire scale, followed by a space and a period. The attackers embed their backup server addresses right there in the plain text of benign-looking developer commits.
So just to make sure I am visualizing this correctly,
Yeah.
using public GitHub commit messages as a backup C2 server, is that essentially like a spy leaving a chalk mark on a public mailbox?
That is exactly what it is.
They are hiding their secret instructions right out in the open where anyone, including defenders, are looking, but no one realizes what it is because it just looks like everyday noise.
That is a perfect analogy. Security software scans for malicious code, not for seemingly random text strings in a developer's update note. It is brilliantly evasive.
Wow.
And if you are a developer or an IT administrator listening to this, the practical impact is severe. The durable task package is downloaded roughly 417,000 times a month.
417,000 times. That is huge.
Yes. And the code runs automatically upon import with zero visible signs. Any machine that installed these versions must be treated as fully compromised.
Because the maintenance worker just walks right through the door.
Exactly. You cannot simply uninstall the package.
Ah.
You have to operate under the assumption that your cloud credentials and password vaults are already gone.
And that 417,000 number is terrifying because it means Team PCP isn't just going after GitHub in a vacuum. If we connect this to the bigger picture, they were using supply chain attacks to breach the companies that rely on these ecosystems.
Right. It creates a ripple effect.
Which brings us to our second story. Enter Grafana Labs. On May 19, 2026, Grafana announced a breach of its GitHub environment. Now, to be clear, no customer production systems were hit, but source code and internal business contacts were exposed.
And this originated directly from the TanStack NPM supply chain attack, which was detected back on May 11th.
Orchestrated by the exact same group, Team PCP.
Yep, the exact same group. They also recently hit OpenAI and Mistral AI with this method.
But here's where it gets really interesting. Grafana actually caught them. They detected the attack and quickly rotated a significant number of GitHub workflow tokens.
Right, they tried to lock them out.
But they missed one. A single workflow they deemed not impacted was actually compromised, and that one missed token let the attackers right back in.
And following this, Grafana received an extortion demand, potentially from the Coinbase cartel who actually listed them on the dark web.
Right.
But Grafana smartly refused to pay, stating it would just fund future campaigns.
I want to focus on that single missed token. We always tell people to rotate your keys. Grafana actually did that, and they still got breached. Doesn't this show how fragile our defense advice is?
It really does.
Missing a single token is like changing every lock on your house, but forgetting to take the old spare key out from under the doormat.
Yeah, that is the harsh reality. The takeaway here is that automation token audits must be absolutely exhaustive.
Right.
99% coverage is a failure. You must audit all commits for malicious activity, not just rotate the keys you think were touched. If you leave the spare key under the mat, they will find it.
Well, we've seen how attackers hide inside developer extensions and automation tokens, but this strategy of hiding in the mundane is also being used right now to target everyday consumers at an unbelievable scale.
Yeah, it's not just an enterprise problem.
Exactly. This is our final story, the Trapdoor Android Scheme. And the numbers here are insane. 659 million daily bid requests, 455 malicious Android apps,
Wow.
over 24 million downloads, mostly hitting US traffic.
To understand how they did this, we have to look at the mechanics. Users download a seemingly innocent utility app, like a PDF viewer or a device cleaner.
Something totally boring.
Right. And this app triggers malvertising that forces fake app update pop-ups, tricking the user into downloading a secondary app.
So the first app is just bait.
Exactly. Only the second stage app actually commits the fraud. It launches hidden web views, loads HTML5 domains, and performs automated touch fraud to steal ad revenue.
It's just simulating invisible clicks in the background. But this raises an important question. How did 455 apps stay hidden on the Play Store for so long?
Well, the answer is incredibly clever. The attackers abused legitimate install attribution tools.
Wait, like the tools marketers used to track where a user came from?
Yes. Trapdoor only activated its malicious behavior if the user was acquired through the threat actor's specific ad campaign.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you organically searched for the app and downloaded it, the malware stayed completely dormant.
So what does this all mean? If I'm following this, it's exactly like a speakeasy. If you just walk up to the front door organically, it looked like a boring, legitimate business. But if you come in through the ad campaign holding the secret password, they open the trap door to the hidden, illicit operation in the back.
That is exactly how they bypassed the security scanners. They used marketing tools as the bouncer. Now, Google has removed these apps, but the takeaway for you is clear.
Right.
Fraudsters are now co-opting legitimate marketing and attribution software to build self-funding pipelines that selectively hide from security researchers.
It is just wild.
Wow.
Let's briefly recap the journey today. From Team PCP hiding C2 servers and public GitHub commits, to a single overlooked token bringing down Grafana's repos, to Android fraudsters weaponizing marketing attribution tools.
Yeah, it's a clear pattern.
The common thread is attackers turning the everyday systems we trust into their own weapons.
It is. And, you know, it leaves us with this final thought to mull over. Today, we saw attackers abusing public GitHub commits, NPM packages, and marketing attribution tools. If threat actors are now flawlessly leveraging the exact same operational tools we use for legitimate business, how long until our basic, everyday software infrastructure becomes entirely indistinguishable from malware?
That is the big question.
Where do we draw the line when the tool itself isn't broken, but perfectly weaponized?
That is something we all need to think about. Thank you for joining today's deep dive. Stay vigilant, question the hidden mechanics of your own daily tech stack, and we'll catch you next time.